What is up, everybody? This is the Primal King Podcast, and again, I am Derek Wilson. This is episode number 21. All right, so today, we're going to kind of go back a little bit to my roots with our guest that we have on, somebody who grew up actually very similar to the way that I grew up, and so I'm super excited to have him on because he's kind of taken the way that we grew up, like the ranching, the farming business, and all of that, and put his own spin on it, right? To where this will be applicable to you and just about any type of business. He just happens to be in the business of farming and ranching and helping those individuals out. So as always, I hope you get a ton of value from it, and let's get started. So the question is this: how do we live the best life that we can with the limited amount of time that we get to be here? Is it by accumulating success and fame and fortune and everything else that society tells us that we need in order to be fulfilled? Or is it much more simple than that? My name's Derek Wilson. I'm the host of the Primal King Podcast, and we're going to be answering this as well as many other questions as we move forward. All right, so welcome back, everybody. Really excited today to talk to my guest. This is someone who grew up working cattle in a feed yard that his granddad had started back in the 1950s and had grown into a multi-million dollar operation. Then in 2005, he watched firsthand as it all came crashing down. He watched his mother cry every day for 2 years. His parents were forced to move from their home of 25 years, as well as file for bankruptcy, lose their vehicles, and be left with little more than a shoebox containing their savings. Then he went on to become an ag banker after college, which allowed him to see everything from the other side. Since then, he's gone on to create Legacy Farmer. His podcast has over 100,000 downloads. He's currently helping farmers and ranchers get back to doing what they love while being able to create a profitable business around it. That includes marketing, diversification, and several other expert insights. Right now, he's doing his best to change the world in an old school industry. It's my pleasure to welcome Mr. Jace D. Young. How are you doing today, Jace?
Thanks for having me. Good. Perfect. Thank you very much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. Awesome. So we were just kind of chatting a little bit just about the industry and everything else with farming and ranching. Again, I know that you kind of grew up around it. I grew up around it. And so I guess just to start with, because Legacy Farmer, I've been able to see a lot about it, but just maybe for those who don't know what that is, like, would you just kind of give us like a quick overview of it?
Yeah. So Legacy Farmer has really become a network and a community of farmers and ranchers. Basically, you know, we have members from all over the U.S. Okay. So currently, at the time of recording of this podcast, right, we're just over 160 members. Okay. These are all farmers or ranchers from all across the U.S. Furthest one out west is California. Furthest one out east is Maryland. Okay. So there's ranges of different sizes and everything. What we do inside of our network is something that's not being done anywhere inside of the farming industry. Okay. It's a place where people can actually find the answers to the hard questions and hard situations that they're put in that they can't go talk to their family members about, their neighbor down the road, their community. They just can't talk about these things openly. So what we have there is, one, we have the community and the network, and then we also provide one-on-one consulting, you know, and we review financial statements. We look at overall really what's going on inside of the industry and inside of this individual family's operation. But, you know, as you talked about, you know, my background there, I'm not sugarcoating anything with these people. Okay, they get sugarcoated truths from their banker, from their community, saying, oh, next year's going to be better, prices are going to go up, or, you know, this could change. We had a once in a 50-year, you know, weather event this year. It's not going to happen next year. Things will get better. But then we get to next year, and it really doesn't seem like that happens, right? So a lot of those things is we're having some really difficult conversations and making some drastic changes in the farm operation. And for a majority of them, we're building additional businesses that provide us cash flow every single year, regardless of what's happening with market prices and all these variables that we don't control. So I'm really proud of what it's become. It's become a really powerful network of people willing to share what's working, what's not working, connect with the real problems and challenges that people are actually facing. And yeah, just a very real and raw and open and honest group.
Do you find it hard? Because, you know, when you talk about the open and honest side of it, I don't know what it is, but again, growing up around ranching, there's a lot of pride that goes into that, right? Like there's a lot of, I wouldn't say arrogance at all, because I don't think it is arrogance, but I think there's just so much pride in what you do and pride in being able to work the land or to, you know, hop on your horse and ride cows, stuff like that, stuff that I saw my dad do and my great granddad do and all of this before. So is it hard to get some of those, I assume probably mostly guys that you work with, but is it hard to get some of them to open up and be like, you know what, I need help. Like, I'm not making any money.
Yeah. It's hard because it's their identity.
Yeah.
That's all they know. That's truly all they know. That's all they've done for 20, 30, 40 years. Some of these guys are fourth, fifth, sixth generation farms. They don't want to be the one that loses it all. But then at the same time, though, there's a lot of pride that goes into it. And the toughest thing with farmers is just getting to that point where you're like, hey, you know what? The world is changing. It's no longer the 60s and 70s. We have to start doing things drastically different. And the people that step into my network, they're prepared to make some massive changes because that's what's required. Because literally, if they don't change things, they could lose everything in the next 3 to 5 years.
Wow. I know for us, because I, on this ranch, technically I'm a fifth generation here. But the way that things were always done up until basically we took over was all just ranch focused. And now and the people listening to the podcast, they know a lot of the backstory, but between the buyout from my stepmom and just how everything shook out, ranching alone would never have paid the bills that we do. So I have to do other things.
Yep.
Do you find it hard if you are having those types of conversations and saying, look, like, you're not making enough money to sustain this, you're going to have to do something in addition, or maybe even outside of ranching or farming. Do you get resistance from that? Or is it usually like, yeah, I know, I just kind of needed somebody to tell me this?
Both, I guess. But it's more the latter. Reason is because people know that, like, and that's just what's crazy, is when we pay for coaching consulting, right? Or we step in any networks, you know, I'm part of my own networks. And I go there just for people for my coaches and my mentors to tell me the things I know, but I have to hear them in order to really like light the fire and go and take action on it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you say that too, because I remember when I was helping my former boss, Russell, with his inner circle, people would pay $25,000 a year to get coaching from him. And it was funny because, you know, you would hear him talk about like, yeah, I'm basically just telling you guys what you already know.
Yeah.
But because you told me you paid me $25,000, you'll actually listen to me now.
So it's an interesting world that we live in, because we have to pay to give ourselves permission. Right. So for the people that are coming into the inner circle, for example, and we have our own Empire Mastermind that we're starting up just with the high level players inside of our group, because these are people that make good money, right? They already have the money, but they don't have the drive behind them, or they're wondering why they don't do things that they know they need to do. So people went into Russell Brunson's inner circle, for example, they don't need to be there, right? There's absolutely no reason for them to be there financially because they're already making it, but they have to write that $25,000 check every year so that mentally there's something sticking back there that says, hey, I have to go do what I said I was going to do because I wrote this check and I have to make things happen. It's a crazy world that we live in, and half the people that come into the group, they're like, yeah, it's kind of nuts, but it's also true. Like if your ass isn't on the line, you don't have some type of leverage on yourself, you're not going to do any of the things that you know you need to do. You just won't. It's our human nature.
It's accountability, right? Uh-huh. So I want to kind of go back a little bit to where, like, the way that you grew up, probably in a lot of ways similar to the way that I grew up. What was it like? Did you enjoy being around cows and kind of the ranch life? Because there's some people that get older and they're like, I hated it. My father-in-law, he grew up on a dairy. He's like, I hated every minute of it. All we did was work. It was awful. And then there's other people that are like, yeah, I grew up and it was great. Yeah, we worked hard, but I loved it. Like, what was your experience?
I liked it. So there's good sides of it and there's bad sides of it. So the lifestyle I loved, right? We grew up 15 miles out in the country, you know, could ride my dirt bikes around, go-karts around and stuff. And, you know, no worries. The feed yard was a half mile away. So my dad was always right there and going and working with my dad and stuff like that. The biggest thing that I miss the most is literally sunrises. That may sound weird to some people, but like, so we get in cattle shipments early in the mornings, 3, 4 a.m., and then we'd immediately go into sorting them, right? So I'd go help my dad out. I'd run the hydraulic levers and, you know, open and close the gates to get these cattle sorted. But I'll never forget, it seemed like we always got done and it was time for me to go open up gates to get the cattle to their appropriate pen. And that was always during sunrise, and it was so calm and it was so quiet and it was so peaceful. Like, that's something that I'll never forget. And a lot of people in the farming and ranch community, that's what they love. Like, those are the peaceful moments, right? But then, so that's the good side of it. The bad side of it is the stress, the family confrontations that you witness, the arguments, the, you know, big fights. I saw some big fights, especially to my dad and my brother. My brother was, you know, he's 12 years older than me. So my dad had him when my dad was pretty young. And there was confrontations there. There was confrontations between my granddad and my dad, you know, and they would go a couple months without talking. These are people that they work together every day, but they don't talk. Like, it's an interesting scenario, right? But then too, what I try to hit with my members is, you know, when those situations happen, that's costing you time, it's costing you energy, and you can dang well bet it's costing you a lot of money as well. Yeah. So those are the kind of the dark periods that I didn't really like.
Sure. So when you, when everything kind of went under, you were out of the house at that point. Is that right?
Nope.
You're still there.
I was moving into my junior year of high school.
Okay. Okay. Yep. So you got to see it. So did that, going through that experience, did it compel you to want to get in more to the banking side of this or the lending side of it? Or did you have any desire to, like, okay, fine, I'm going to go start up my own farm or my own ranch. Like, did you have any desire to do that?
No, the thought hadn't really crossed my mind yet. Just because I was, you know, high school, focused on college, and then I get into college and get into banking, and really thought I was going to be in banking forever. Like, I really did, but it was getting into the bank that took me back to the emotions of the farm. Because, you know, people talk, you know, a lot of farms are going out of business, and people like to, you know, they say, well, that's terrible for them. That sucks. And it's a hard thing for them to go through. But the reality is they don't see what happens behind closed doors, like what family life is like at home, and the emotions and the mental toll it takes on you. So at that immediate time, no, I had no intention of getting back into it, because I saw what it did to my dad, right? And my mom. My dad goes from running a multi-million dollar feed yard with 15 plus employees. Some of them have been with him for 20 years, all the way down to, I'm going to go drive trash truck. And nothing against people that do that, right? But him having to go to he has to go drive trash truck for the local community, making 10 bucks an hour just to put food on the table, right? That's two massively opposite ends of the spectrum. So yeah, when they went through that, I didn't really have any desire to follow in his footsteps.
Wow. Wow. So when you got into the banking side of it, did you know that you were going into the ag side of that?
Yeah, I figured long-term that's what I'd be doing, just because that's what I knew.
So what did that teach you then? Having gone through what you did, the bankruptcy and everything else, or watching that with your family, now all of a sudden you get on the other side. Was it just like one of those, now I get it, now I understand why? Like, was there kind of that aha moment once you start getting into that side of the business?
So I got into banking in late 2010. And so 2011, 2012, I was wondering, like, why am I in the bank? I need to be out on the farm. Reason is because we had record prices across the board. Like, highest price for wheat down in Kansas was $13.84. Like, I had customers in the bank that were making $1 million cash and paying zero in taxes. Like, just crazy. And, you know, I'm sitting there making 40 grand and I'm paying more in taxes than some of the customers are. Right. So at that time I was like, man, farming's great. Why isn't everybody doing this? Like, I should get into it. Little did I know. And then comes 2013 and all of a sudden cattle prices start to roll over and $3,200 bred heifers are no more. And we see guys take a pretty massive shift in their balance sheets and their net worth drops by 30-40%. And we start to see the dark times. So it was 2013 through 2016 that just all the hard punches came out. All of reality came afloat to, like, what was really happening and the situations people were put in. And that's when I really started to, one, just connect all the dots, that see the decisions that were being made that put us in that position anyway. Like, I could see exactly what my granddad did based off of what people were doing when I was working with them in the bank. But really the final thing that really struck home with me is I'm sitting there in my office and having hard conversations with some of these clients at the bank. And I look in their eyes and the only look I see is the same look my parents had. Like, it's generational work, right? Some of them are, one of the families that I worked with that went bankrupt, they filed bankruptcy 2017. Their farm had been around since the 1850s.
Wow.
Lost everything. We took them on. We put a mortgage on ground that hadn't been mortgaged for 40 to 60 years. but they were that far in the hole that they had to leverage everything, and they ended up losing everything. And so it was just having those conversations that took me back. It was like, okay, like something has to be done about this, because this stuff is not being talked about publicly and the decisions that are being made.
So when you were working the bank job, because to me, I don't know, from what I've noticed is that a lot of people who grow up, whether it be ranching, whether it be farming, any of that, it seems like it breeds an entrepreneurial streak in you, because you just have to figure stuff out, right? It's not like so many other jobs or even businesses, maybe, to where there's checks and balances to get stuff. It's like, so many times, I even remember as a kid, it was just like, you just figure it out. Or my dad being like, yeah, you just figure it out, because there's no manual on how to do this stuff, especially, you know, before. Now there's YouTube and all that fun stuff. Yep. But having grown up the way that you did, when you moved into the job, was there ever a part of you that's like, man, I'm not wired to be a bank guy. Like, I'm not wired to be a job guy. Like, you know, growing up the way I did, it makes me want to do my own stuff, have my freedom, have my own lifestyle. Like, was there that dilemma for you?
100%. And that happened within the first 2 weeks. Like, so I get my bank job, I'm sitting down there and I'm like, okay, I'm set. Like, I'm good to go. And within the first 2 weeks of me going in and sitting behind this desk from 9 to 5 throughout the day, the thoughts came over my head, like, this is it. Like, this is really what I'm supposed to do for the next 45 years. Like, this isn't a life to me.
Yeah. How'd you get through it? Got your first paycheck?
Yeah. You get your first paycheck. And then, you catch a little bit of wind, right? You're like, okay, well, maybe this will be fine. It'll be fine. But then at the end of the month, you know, you only have a few $100 left over. And then you add on a wife and kids, and all of a sudden now you're like really breaking even, and you know that long term it's not sustainable, and you're never going to build anything big, never going to have any retirement. That's when it really started becoming apparent.
So one of the big things that I've talked a lot about so far in the podcast is lifestyle. Why do you think it is that so many people will stay, you know, just kind of go into that part of your life, because you got out of it. I got out of it before with what I was doing. And I don't mean this to be derogatory to the people who are in this situation right now, but why do you think it is that so many people will stay in a job to where every day they're like 45 years of this, or they will stay? And I mean, do you feel like it's just a comfort thing? Is it a lack of knowing other opportunities? Like, why, what do you see?
It's a comfort thing. For me, it was a comfort thing. It was a lack of belief thing. It was also an environment thing. Okay. So when I left the banking industry, I did it without anybody's approval. Okay. My wife and I, we had just had our second child. So I had two babies at home, $6,000 in savings account. Right. And I up and leave the bank. Wife didn't even know. I did it on a Saturday afternoon. I was like, nope, I'm done. I got to go do this. And it was like that day that I chose that was the first time that I felt I just had this voice in the back of my head just screaming at me that I was supposed to go. Okay. That voice to me is God. I don't know what your listeners are like, but like, that's what I felt like for the first time, like, you have to go. I was jumping into this unknown. It was like you were jumping off a cliff into a sea of clouds and you can't see what's below. Right. And so a lot of people, it's just that simple fear right there in their environment, because once I took the jump, you know, I had to put blinders on. Like, my, you know, things were rough at home. My wife thought I was being selfish and I, you know, abandoned our family, and I was just doing what was best for me. My parents thought I was crazy. Same with my siblings and just everybody. They're like, you're an idiot. What are you doing? You have a family at home. I said, yeah, you're right. I do have a family at home, and they deserve a hell of a lot better life than what I'm going to give them here. Like, so there's two ends of the spectrum there, right? There's two different perspectives. And over time, that perspective on, hey, I can't settle and I have one life to live and I got to go.
It's funny, because if you think about it that way, it makes it a lot easier, because it was the same way for me. Like, when I walked away from my job at ClickFunnels, it's like six-figure salary at that point, benefits, retirement, everything else. And it's just like, I don't want to do this anymore. And the first time I tell my wife, it's like, what do you mean? Because she wasn't working either, right? So it's like, okay, but what does that mean? What does it mean you don't want to do it anymore? But then it was kind of like you. It's the crazy thing to me that I've realized, and I wonder how much you've seen it as well, because you talk to enough people now within Legacy Farmer and everything else, that it seems like sometimes when you make a decision and you put yourself out there doing what you feel like is in alignment with what you want to do, it's amazing how opportunities just kind of start opening themselves. Did you notice that?
100%. Right. There's a sequence of events that takes place, and it becomes a game of just mastering focus. Like, because there's so many opportunities that a lot of them are just shiny objects that are just keeping you distracted from where you're actually supposed to go. It took me a couple of years of really realizing that, because once I took the leap, I got into like four businesses at once. Started a crop insurance company. I was doing financial services. Wasn't even doing legacy farmer, you know, the consulting and the network and the community that we have now. Like, I just jumped into a bunch of different things. Well, you know, jack of all trades, master of none. You just start to half-ass all of them. And then you slowly kind of get back on track and pick one thing and run with it.
So you're going through all these different things after you walked away. What actually led you, like, how did you come up with Legacy Farmer? What was that process like?
So there was a sequence of events that I went through. So 2017, I actually got involved in Wake Up Warrior. Okay. And you know who that is, I'm sure, with the ClickFunnels community, Garrett White. Yeah. So I made some money early 2017, and this is about 6 months after I'd left the bank. So I got lucky on a couple deals. I made about 110 grand or so. But the reality was, though, is I knew that I didn't have things figured out. Like, I didn't know what I was doing. I still wasn't a marketer. I didn't understand ClickFunnels. I didn't understand marketing on Facebook ads. I didn't understand systems, automation, nothing, right? I didn't have a plan. I knew I just got lucky. And there was still a major lack of trust that my wife had in me, because I'd up and left the bank, right? That destroyed every ounce of trust that she had, right? So what do I do? Well, I test her trust even further, and I go and I spend 10 grand to go to Warrior Week, right? And I fly out to California, go through that. And that just started this sequence of events in my life to where started to trust the path that I was on. I started to build that belief inside of myself and started to just make moves. Like, I just started making moves. So at one point we moved out to Utah, and we moved out there for an opportunity. Opportunity didn't work out. And that was 2018. And we're coming back, and one of my friends that I went through my Warrior Week with, everybody in there, they're like, you need to be helping farmers. Like, what are you doing? Like, go back to what you know. Like, this is what your calling is. This is what you need to be doing. And he looked at me and he goes, the longer you disobey God, the more painful it's going to be. And that really just kind of struck home with me, is like, the longer you don't listen, the harder the lessons are going to be. I'm like, okay. So come back, move my family back to Kansas about a year ago, like January 30th of 2019 is when we pulled back in. And I started Legacy Farmer that month. And then we've just been cruising ever since. So there was a sequence of events, but, you know, I avoided helping farmers for as long as I could. Like, I really did. I didn't want to come back in it, because I didn't want to have to experience the pain that I know is taking place in the industry today, that I, you know, have to relive what my parents went through with all these clients and all these customers. But, you know, I avoided it. But at the same time, all of a sudden now you get into what you were meant to get into, and everything just starts happening and it just starts clicking along. And all of a sudden you're like, okay, this is what I went through everything prior to this for, right? All the risk, all the unknowns, all the chances and the wins and the losses, the ups and the downs, it was all in preparation for this.
Wow. What was, like, when you say you started it, what was the first thing you did? And the reason why I ask this is because I know that there's people out there that are like, okay, cool. Jay started a business and Derek started a business, or whoever else started these businesses. But it's like, where the hell do I start? Right? Was it just like a Facebook post being like, hey, I'm starting Legacy Farmer? Or like, was there more, like, what was that process like for you?
So a lot of people, especially in the groups that I'm in, you know, with network marketers and stuff, everybody has an organic strategy, right? Like, everybody has just started organic and do that. First thing I did when we came back is I brought our first trailer load of stuff moving back from Utah. First thing I did is I took my phone and I went down to our old feed yard. And I don't know, you may have seen this video, may have not, but I record a video down at the feed yard. The feed yard is deserted. There's nobody down there anymore, right? So there's just empty pens and feed bunks and everything behind me. It's just a wasteland. I turn on the camera and I start talking. I start telling the story. And that video right there, I didn't even recognize it at the time, like what it was going to do. But that one video took everything to where it is today. The video has like over 3 million views now, because it connects with people, right? It's like empty wasteland behind me. Like that's, people are going to stop and watch that. And I didn't even think about that at the time because I didn't have the knowledge about it. So I run that video, but I didn't just post it just organically. I didn't have a lot of money at the time, and I doubled down. And some of the things that Garrett White told me, he goes, if you are not running paid advertising, you will fail long-term guaranteed. And so I put money behind it. And all of a sudden now I'm getting my message and getting what I'm trying to do in front of people. And I'm putting money behind my message. And that's when the leads started coming in. That's when the people started seeing the community and they want to be a part of it and everything. So for a person getting ready to start anything, one, pick what you're going to do, but two, just get clear on your message and be able to put money behind your message. Like that's the difference. Everybody likes to talk about what they're going to do. When it comes to putting your butt on the line and putting some money behind what you're trying to do, that's like the determining factor on who's committed and who's not.
Yeah, for sure. I know that Russell talked a lot about when I was with him, whoever can pay the most for a customer wins, right? Yep. And that's a big part of it too. You have to be making money out the other side of that to justify it, but absolutely. So you start with Legacy Farmer. What would you say is there one kind of overarching issue when someone comes in? You know, it's like, depending on what space or what niche you're in, it's like, you know, you kind of run into some common themes or something, but within the farm and ranch space, like, is there one kind of most common problem that they run into?
Yeah, they're not making any money farming.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. I have guys that come into the group and they're losing $200,000 to $500,000 per year.
Wow.
I haven't changed anything. Work ethic is still solid, right? Still going out and working 100 hours a week, yet the amount of money they're taking home is negative every year.
Mm-hmm.
Right? When I start, and I'm a numbers guy, so when I start breaking things down for the clients to let them know how much their hour of work is worth, right? And it's less than minimum wage or even way below zero because they're losing money. That's what puts it into perspective for people saying, I got to change things. Because it's very easy for these guys to go into the bank, say they lost $300,000, right? And they go into the bank and the bank says, well, you know, you got $2 million worth of equity here. Like, that's fine. We'll just term out your debt, right? We'll pledge it against this ground over here and we'll make the payments affordable to where we can just cash flow it next year. And we, you know, our game plan is to hope and pray for higher prices. That's not a strategy, right? That's, you're setting a person up for failure there, not just financially, but emotionally and who they are as a person to constantly be out and you're busting your ass to build this thing and not knowing on whether or not you're going to make money into the year. People lose themselves doing that.
Do you think it's different in this industry than a lot of, because it seems like it is in the sense to where there's a lot of businesses to where if you were going $200,000 to $300,000 a year in debt, they'd be like, oh, we're out. People don't like my widgets, whatever it is that I'm selling, you know, they don't like whatever, you know, service I'm providing. But with farms and ranches, it seems like it's not that uncommon, I don't think. Maybe not that scale, but I know that, you know, even people that we've grown up around and friends that I have, going $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year in debt for a couple consecutive years with cattle prices being down isn't that crazy, right?
I know.
But like most other businesses, people are like, oh, peace out, I'm out selling the building. I'm gonna go do something else. Like, what do you think it is that keeps crazy ranchers just coming back? Is it just the eternal optimism? No other options? They feel like, oh, I'll just work 22 hours instead of 20 this year. Like,
well, it's kind of what we talked about in the beginning, identity.
Yeah.
Like, that's all these people know. So I had a hot seat with one of our members about 2 weeks ago. The guy's lost about $1.5 million over the past 4 years. Massive numbers, massive, massive numbers. Like total debt that they're sitting in is around $4 million. And these are people that are honestly, Derek, they're trying to take home, they're paying themselves $40,000 a year out of their operation. Wow. And yet they're $4 million in debt. So think about this, okay? If I'm going out, let's say a person is $4 million in debt. Well, if you make $1 million a year, right? Then it's not that big, right? Yeah. But the comprehension isn't that big is what I'm saying. But when you're making $40,000 and you're like worried about paying bills at your house, yet you're sitting with $4 million in debt, they don't even comprehend the decision that they're making, right? So that when the banker says, hey, you got this land over here you inherited, right? You still got $2 million in equity. Let's just take the $500,000 that you lost this year and you'll be able to farm again next year. And they're saying, great, awesome. So I just get to keep doing what I love. This is my identity. I'm a farmer. I'm going to keep doing that. When the reality is, the banker should be saying, if you do not change things drastically right now, you have 4 years left until you are bankrupt and everything is gone. Right? So those are the critical conversations that we have, because there's a lot of misperceptions inside of the industry, and people, their identity, and you know, they love to be farmers, they love what they do, they love the lifestyle, and they will literally burn it to the ground trying to continue it.
Why do you think having come from the banking side of it too, why do you think there aren't more conversations like that? Is it just because the notes that people are making money on? Is it not knowing? Like, just bankers don't know, understand?
Some of them, well, the good bankers know. Like, they know what's going on. And, you know, my brother is still a banker. So he got into banking. That's why I got into banking. Farm closed down in 2005. He became an ag loan officer, and he's been in it ever since. But he does it differently than what a majority of them do, because he'll be direct with people. Because he knows what's on the other side, right? And that's why I will be direct with people now. So that's what kind of separates me inside of this industry, is nobody is really coming in with the training and coaching background that I have, going through Warrior and all those programs, but then watching the farm go under and then seeing the financial side in the banking industry. Like, I bring kind of an interesting perspective here, and I can have a lot of different conversations with people in regards to how they're managing their farm and what the numbers look like too. I can see both perspectives. So why are people not having more of those conversations? Well, one, the banker may not know about it, or two, he knows about it, he just doesn't have the guts to say anything. Like, and the reason is because on the back end, the bank is making interest, right? So they're charging money, they're making a pile of interest every year. And then two, the bank doesn't know what they should do. Like, so some people, they're the bank and the client, they're forced. They are absolutely forced to just keep going and hoping and praying for higher prices, because the bank can't afford to let them go either.
Yeah.
Right, because if they foreclose on them, the bank's going to lose money because their equity positions are all screwed up in today's market.
Crazy. So crazy. It's crazy how the business side of it works, right? Because we all like to think that you can just farm or ranch or whatever else, but I think even now it's just becoming more and more difficult, it seems like.
Oh, 100%. Right. I spoke up at Montana at the Young Farmers Association back in October. So I'm speaking to this room of, it was like 150, like 25 to 30 year old farmers. There was a bunch of there was probably 10 to 20 people that were in 35 to 40s. And I'm sitting there and I'm talking to this young group, right, that really isn't that much younger than me. I've just experienced a lot more than they have. And I was very direct in my presentation. I told them what they had coming for them if they did not do things differently, if they did not actually focus on building out a service-based business so they have continuous cash flow coming in. And we get into some of our private sessions, and everybody's in the room, and I say, how many people here are saving for their first piece of ground? Because that's what we're taught, trained, and conditioned to do. Like, you see your granddad buying ground, you see your dad, so that's all you want to do too. I was the same way. And everybody raised their hands, right? So these are a bunch of kids. And I said, what do you want me to tell you? The likelihood is that you will never, never in your life pay off that piece of ground. And they said, well, what do you mean? Like, we're set, like, most of the ground is set up on 20-year term. I said, yeah, you're absolutely right. It's set up on a 20-year term note. I said, but what happens when you lose 200 grand in 1 year? What's the bank going to go after? Well, that piece of ground. And now all of a sudden you just find yourself re-leveraging that same piece of ground over and over and over again. And it just continues to spiral, right? So that's the type of stuff that is happening in the industry. And people they're not knowingly doing it. They're doing it because that's what they saw their parents did. And they're not really thinking about it or running the numbers on whether or not it makes logical sense. We're basing every decision off of emotions.
Well, and that's the thing that I don't know. And I've had this conversation with the people that we partner with in our cattle operation now, because we had to completely change everything when all of our cows got sold after my dad died and we took on the debt and everything else. It's like, I don't know how you could start now. You know what I mean? Like first generation ranchers or farmers, I don't know how you do it unless you start super small scale and then you just slowly over time maybe get bigger. But as far as going and buying a couple thousand acres and a couple hundred head of cows,
not happening.
You can't do it. Yeah. You can't, there's no way. Like, we can barely do it on the ranch side just from our partnership on, and we don't even have to have a note on the cows.
Yep.
And it's like, we can barely do half of it basically, you know, with it sustaining itself there. So do you have people that they come to you and they're like, I'm not in this situation yet, but I want to be? Like, do you have that? Because it seems like it is kind of getting a little more popular again to be a farmer and a rancher. It's almost like we went way away from it. And now it's like, we're kind of coming back to, you know, organic food and grow your own and kind of that stuff. And if they do, are you telling them that, being like, I don't know, you buy one cow on an acre and then just kind of go from there?
Yeah. So that would be a waste of time, right? Cause the ROI is not there. It doesn't make it even worth it, right? Unless you're able to go full scale into it, still not going to be worth it. But at the same time too, with people, even if you do already have a profitable farm operation, I still push building an additional business that runs alongside the farm operation, because you need a level of certainty going forward. Because otherwise, you know, you could be, you know, make $100,000 last year, but then we have massive rain this year all the way up north. I don't know how much you guys got in Idaho, but I had guys in North Dakota that still had crops in the ground beginning of January. They couldn't get in to harvest. Like, so then you have situations like that come in, and now all of a sudden you go from positive $100,000 to, oh, lost $200,000 this year. And it's just this constant cycle, rather than building a business like ClickFunnels, where it's just what? You bring on new users, new memberships every single month. It just slow and steady growth year after year after year after year, right? Instead of playing a gamble.
What kind of businesses do you suggest businesses to people? Do you just kind of help them uncover maybe something that they could do? Cause like, again, I know that like I had a buddy of mine who, he had to do a lot of, like excavation work and stuff along with his cows. Mm-hmm. You know, another friend of mine who does, electrical work in addition to his cows. I mean, is it stuff like that? Or are you telling them, hey, go get some type of a trade degree or something like that?
So there's that, there's a range of different custom businesses that everybody can do. Right. There's so much opportunity there. And what's great about it is even in the bank. Okay. If wheat harvest would get over in July and we would look at our customers' cash flow, they'd tell us how many bushels they had in the co-op. And we'd say, okay, well, we're still coming up short $200,000. And there's still people out there cutting their wheat. You better put your combine to work and go have other people pay you for a service. People look at it as like, oh yeah, I'm just helping out Farmer Joe. No, you're actually doing something, and every hour that you're on that combine, you are making money. Whereas when you're cutting your own crops, you're like, yeah, I hope I make money.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously. And so we look at any type of custom service-based businesses. Like there's a lot of different things they can do there. People can get into crop insurance. People can get into selling seed, right? There's we operate in a $1 trillion industry, right? There's so much money on average out of every dollar that's produced from taking the crop off the field to selling it on the shelf at the grocery store, out of every dollar that's produced, the average farmer gets 10 cents, roughly, okay? So why not start selling seed and start taking 20 cents or 30 cents, and you start taking money away from the corporations, because that's who's banking all of it. They're controlling the market. It's a monopolized market, right? So you might as well start looking at other avenues there. But then too, what excites me is I have a couple people that are getting into consulting. Right. And they have, like I told you prior to our call about the genetics guy in Idaho, right? That's such a huge market, and there's so much opportunity there to get your knowledge out there. But yet these are people, again, they grew up in a small little 20-mile radius. They've never left those 20 miles. So me bringing up the concept of, hey, let's market your knowledge here. Let's build a consulting business. I'm going to show you how to get your message out all over the US. They're like, whoa, what do you mean? Are people doing this? And I'm like, how are you and I on the phone right now? I guess the same thing.
Yeah.
So really trying to open people's minds up to how many different ways that they can make money and provide value.
It's like, what you're saying is that I'm really, really smart at this and people will actually pay me for it because I am so smart at it. It's like, well, yeah, that's consulting, right?
That's how it goes.
That's awesome.
And half these guys too, like there's two guys that I have that are doing the consulting thing. And one of them, he works for JBS Cattle, right? So big cattle buying company. And he's up in Michigan, and he goes, you know, I have people calling me all the time, like clients that I've sold, you know, bought for JBS. And, you know, I know everybody all over Michigan. He goes, but I have my own cow herd, and they'll call me all the time asking for my advice on, you know, their genetics plan and what they should be doing with their cow herd and all these things. I was like, well, that's interesting. Are you charging them for your time? He goes, well, no, why would I do that? Like, you're just helping out a neighbor. No, you're providing them value that's saving them a lot of money long term and putting more dollars in their pocket. That's why you charge a fee. That is what we do. Right. And so that just opened up his world. We get some very basic things done. And I think he had 4 new appointments coming up over the last 2 days.
Wow.
Like that, it's just crazy. Right. So now you can see that guy's world completely shift. If he gets a person that's paying him $500 a month recurring just for access to his knowledge.
Yeah. Well, and then all of a sudden you get to the point to where if nothing else, maybe you have enough of a side income to help you, right? To help you on your farm or on your ranch to where you're not working so much and you can actually have some freedom, which a lot of farmers and ranchers really don't have much of.
Correct.
So really, really cool stuff. Well, man, I really, really appreciated having you on. I want to start wrapping it up here. So a big part of what we typically cover on the podcast is I love talking about kind of liberation, the mindset side of it, just getting outside of what maybe people always think and giving some different ideas. And I know that you've done a big part of that. Talking about lifestyle, how to create lifestyles that you actually want to be a part of. And then lastly is the legacy side of it. So I want to turn that over to you. Having gone through what you have, having kind of the unique experience of being both on the farm side and then on the marketing side, merging them all together, helping people the way that you're doing right now. But I guess down the road, whenever that day comes, what do you actually want your legacy to be?
So it's kind of interesting because even as you're recording this podcast, you're going to impact people's lives that you never had any idea that you impacted. So we've had several members come in, and these are guys that have been in really dark places, right? So they're like to the point where they've lost so much money, or the family relationships are so bad, or they're just a realm of different problems that they're facing, to where these people are in really dark places, like to the point to where we're talking suicide and things like that. And I've had guys come in, and there was a guy that came in about 2 weeks ago. He goes, "Hey, before we jump into our conversation, and I have an application for everybody to apply to come in, and then they meet with me one-on-one. I'm just very protective about who I let into our program and our network." And he goes, "Before we get started, I just want to thank you." And I said, for what?" He goes, "Well, you know, you saved my life last year." And I said, "Well, okay, how is that?" And he goes, "You know, we lost our dairy farm in 2018. And I had to sell everything that I'd worked for my entire life." He goes, "Then my wife left me 6 months later." Right. And so obviously he's going to spiral into a very dark path going forward. And he goes, "There was days that I was done. Like I really wanted to be done." And he goes, "For some reason," he goes, "I feel like some higher power put a certain episode of your podcast, like on my phone that day, or whatever you posted that day. It was like that message was there meant for me." Right. I never expected that. Right. I never expect, I'm a small town kid. I grew up in Tribune, Kansas, 900 person town, 21 people in my graduating class. Like I grew up 15 miles out in the country. Right. So how is my message impacting somebody and potentially, you know, saving them that's in Indiana? Right. Which is just crazy to me to really think about that. So when I think about legacy and really what I want that to be long-term, it's that. Right. It's just having that impact, whether I can help somebody out, you know, financially. Yes. Everybody wants to make money. We got to make money to pay for things and do all these things. But at the end of the day, that's not why we all do what we do. Right. There's a purpose behind it. And so, you know, long term, there's 2.2 million farmers. The more money I make, the more money I'm going to put behind Facebook ads. Right. The more I'm going to get this message of truth out into as many people's lives as possible. Right. And what's crazy too, Derek, is I've had some people come in and they've said, "Is it okay to not farm?" Like, what does that say to you, right? Because their identity is so locked into this. And so, you know, just showing them that there's different opportunities there, they can do something different and it's okay. Like, just because your granddad did it, just because your dad did it, whatever, like, it doesn't mean you have to do it. You can be your own person and do this. So my legacy long-term is just trying to impact as many people as I can in that way. Because now I've gotten to actually experience it and feel it. Like, you know, you would ask me a year ago, I'd say, "Well, I want to save people's farms." It's not even about that. Like, I just want to impact the person and change the trajectory of their life. And the final test, I guess, would be, you know, when I die one day and, you know, we have my funeral and everything, it'd be pretty cool if 10,000 people showed up. You know, like, I'm serious. Like, that's like what drives me, because inside of the ag industry, I kind of have a rare opportunity, because there's nobody really speaking what I'm speaking. Like, and people come in and sometimes, and a lot of the guys come in from the podcast and they're like, you know, at first I just thought you were kind of full of shit. Like, I thought you were just out there just talking randomly. They're like, but then I just felt like you were actually watching me over my shoulder for the next 3 weeks. Like, because everything you talk about is like my daily life. I was like, yeah, I know. So just long term, that's what I'm shooting for. It's not money. It's not fame. It's just how many people can I impact in a positive way, help shift a few things inside of their life, and see what positive things come because of that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I love it. Love it. You're doing it. That's the beauty, right? You're doing it. Maybe not to the scale you want yet, but you're doing it. It's just going to get better from here.
Yeah.
Where can people find you? Maybe somebody listening to this is like, holy cow, like that's exactly what I need. Where do they find you at? Social media, website?
Yeah. So, you can find me on Facebook and I just go by everything on my personal name. So if you just type in Jace D. Young, you'll be able to find my fan page there and have a lot of content there. Everybody can send me a friend request too, right? Like I'm still people person. People reach out to me. I respond. Have Legacy Farmer the podcast, right? Not trying to steal people from your show, but just let them know what they can get to know a lot about me there. And then our website is legacyfarmer.org. And then they can check out more of the trainings and just get a feel for who we are and what we do and what we're building there.
Perfect. So Jace D. Young on social media, J-A-C-E, just so you know. yeah, check out legacyfarmer.org. Doing some amazing things. The video there is super, super good. Love what you did there. Just again, Jace, want to really thank you for coming on. I think you're doing something that is near and dear to my heart. I know that growing up in the ranching kind of business, if you will, the ranching space, and then having gone away from it and coming back, like I think you and I kind of share that unique maybe perspective on it. And the fact that you're doing something and helping the people, like my kind of people, right?
Yeah.
But the fact that you're helping those people is just so amazing. So again, I'm appreciative of you for that. And thanks again for coming on.
Yeah, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Awesome. All right, guys. Well, we will wrap this one up and we'll talk to you next week. Thank you, everybody, for listening to another episode of the Primal King Podcast. There's one thing that I will ask you to do. Please make sure that you are subscribed to the show so you get all of the new episodes coming out. Also, please make sure that you rate and review the show so that way other people can have access to this podcast, to this content, and this community. Again, thank you, everyone, for listening, and we'll see you next time.